Lowe's helps refresh your garden in time for Mother's Day. Right now, get 5 bags of 1.5 cubic foot Scotts Naturescapes mulch for just $10. Plus, select 1.5 gallon annuals hanging baskets make the perfect gift. Now 2 for only $15. The best garden starts with great deals. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/7. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, we know that Kerry people think that their county is the centre of the universe. Well, for the last weekend of May, it may well become the centre of global economics as Killarney hosts the second Global Economic Summit. The weekend retreat will host a number of economic heavy hitters from around the globe. That includes my next guest, who had the honour of being NASA's first chief economist. It's great to welcome Alex McDonald to the show. Alex, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, Bobby. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Now, we talk to a lot of economists on this show, Alex, but we've never spoken to one from NASA. Tell us the role of the chief economist in NASA. How does it work? What did you do there?
Well, see, it's important to remember that NASA is a $25 billion agency, and it covers everything from human spaceflight to satellites that do Earth observations to robotic probes that go out to the moons of Jupiter. And all of those things cost money. In fact, they often cost quite a lot of money. And so the job of the chief economist is really to serve as one of the principal advisors to the head of NASA, the NASA administrator, as well as the other members of the NASA leadership, and advise them on best practices and cost modeling, best practices in estimating the economic impact, because, of course, politicians always want to know, you know, what's in this for us and what's in this for me. And, of course, also these days, it's deeply important to be doing economic analysis on the commercial space companies, because, of course, we're seeing a rise in private sector space capabilities. NASA has very much been at the forefront of this. I've been privileged to be working with a lot of these companies for over 15 years. And that's really been a sea change. And that's really a change in how we do contracting and how we think about the role of commercial capabilities within the overall architecture of NASA's missions.
That's very interesting. And if we look at the history of NASA, Alex, if we talk about, I suppose, the boom years of the 60s, the early 70s, when we were landing, or when NASA were putting men on the moon, did it enter kind of a strange phase post that, in that when the moon exploration seemed to be abandoned and we weren't quite at Mars, was there some lost years there?
Well, I don't think anyone at NASA would consider them lost years. Certainly, we flew the space shuttle incredibly extensively. We launched more people to space than ever before. Hundreds of people went to space through the space shuttle, including our first international astronauts that we would take from the European Space Agency. We also, of course, built the International Space Station, which our astronauts currently still live on and have been living on 24/7 for now over 25 years.
Yeah, so that's amazing.
I wouldn't consider them lost. However, you're not wrong that the budget history is very simple to describe. NASA starts in 1958. There is a massive peak in 1965 when the peak of the Apollo spending happens, and then it declines where it levels out at 1972. And if you do an inflation-adjusted graph, it is a flat budget since 1972. And that explains why we have been turning to commercial partnerships more, because people at NASA, you know, they're motivated by the mission. Our goal is to get back to the moon, to develop a permanent presence there, to go on to Mars, to continue the permanent exploration of the cosmos. And people at NASA think about where are all the different ways that we can find new resources to do that. And when your budget is flat, you need to think of new ways.
And tell me then about, you know, you're talking about serious sums of money here. The role of the commercial partners, you know, they might have a different agenda to NASA, or at least some of them would. One that I'm thinking of, who also owns an electric car factory. How do you, I suppose, align the missions there that both NASA and the commercial partner are on the same page?
It's a really great question. The way in which we do it essentially is to focus on the mission requirements that NASA needs to get its mission done, and to not worry as much about what else the company may be doing with those capabilities. Back in Apollo, we would put out the requirements down to the size of the nut, right, on a spaceship. And then NASA would take ownership of that vehicle. And that certainly made sense because there were no other customers for those capabilities at that time. But what we started shifting to around at this point 15 years ago was to really put out the high-level requirements. This is, we want to deliver so many kilograms to this orbit, pressurized, to deliver to the space station. You figure out how to do it. And then if you can find other people to purchase that, you own the vehicle, we're purchasing the service of the delivery of that cargo, and you can sell that to other people. And that's what's created companies like SpaceX. It's really NASA's approach to procurement that allows for them to own the hardware and then sell their services to others that has allowed this economy to really explode in the last 10 years.
There's always, I suppose, political interference is probably the wrong word, but the political appetite, again, will come and go. And I suppose with the recent administration, the Trump administration, he was certainly making noises about, you know, bringing NASA center stage again. Is that likely to happen, do you think?
Well, so I served during the first Trump administration, as well as during the Biden administration, and I actually started working at NASA headquarters under the Obama administration. And one of the things that's been really consistent has been this desire on the part of many different presidents and many different U.S. Congresses to return to the moon and go on to Mars. Certainly, there's now been more public statements about wanting to get on to Mars quicker, but Mars is a very different type of mission than getting to the moon. As a brief summary, you know, you can get to the moon in about 3 days. You can't really get to the moon any quicker than 6 months.
To Mars.
Right. And when you're talking about coming back, the current levels of propulsion, and we don't even have this currently in hand, but we can certainly design and easily imagine doing it. You would currently be waiting at Mars potentially for up to 500 days before another 6 month mission back. So it is a very different scale of mission, very different scale of economic challenge to figure out how you're going to get all those resources there. So we'll see how the mix goes. But the key is that we still have this Artemis mission that's coming up next year. The first astronauts that are going to launch around the moon, three American astronauts and a Canadian astronaut, the first international astronaut that NASA's invited on a mission around the moon, is scheduled to launch next year. They actually pulled up the date a couple months because things are looking good and it's a priority mission. So it is going to be front and center regardless of political interests and statements, because we've been planning to return the moon now for over 15 years, and we're just about to do it. And we're going to see, I hope, an incredible new era of interest and excitement in space, with hopefully new people kind of who are young looking at this opportunity and figuring out, you know, what do they want to do to contribute to our future in the stars.
What are the kind of current thoughts around the moon, say, over the next few decades, in terms of, like, is there still, do we still need to learn a lot more about it?
There's certainly a lot of really interesting questions. One of the interesting questions is, what is the distribution of water ice on the moon? We know that there is water ice on the moon. What we don't know is how accessible it is, how it's distributed, and whether or not it might actually be able to be used as a resource for the astronauts who might be living there. We have not gone to the lunar poles. We just had our first robotic landing at the lunar poles, but we haven't gone there with people. And that's the plan. The plan is to go to the poles to start to look at the potential resource distributions for longer term habitation.
Very exciting. The other thing I'd say to Alex is that in terms of, I suppose, the importance of NASA around, you know, world, the brand NASA in terms of world dominance. So its importance, I suppose, for the USA that internationally that, you know, we're doing all this stuff. We're leading space exploration. We're putting people on the moon or on Mars. It's hugely important in terms of, I suppose, the status of America within the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a book called The Long Space Age that looked at the economic history of space exploration. And when you look at the economic history of space exploration, one of the core reasons that governments and rich individuals fund it is to signal to the world their capability and their leadership. And that has been true for hundreds of years. That was true for the Royal Observatories, and it's true for space programs today. And that doesn't seem to be changing. You're having geopolitical competition now. Certainly, China is looking to return to the moon. It would, of course, be for them the first time that they would launch humans to the moon. And that puts a little bit more pressure on the U.S. Because now there's competition again. But this is an old cycle. You know, we've seen this. We've seen this with the transit of Venus expeditions in the 18th century, and of course, we saw it in the Cold War in the
1960s. With the Russians, yeah.
You got it.
Listen, I know you're coming to the second Global Economic Summit in Killarney, and I hope you'll enjoy that beautiful part of the world. What are you going to be telling your audience down there?
I am very much looking forward to being back in Ireland. And of course, like many people from Canada and the United States, of course, have Irish ancestors from Antrim and Armagh. So I'm looking to go visit some of the areas up there as well. But I think we're going to be talking about the importance of space to Europe today. One of the biggest shifts that we've seen in the last few months has been a massive commitment by European governments to increase defense spending and therefore correspondingly space spending. And that has started to change a lot of thinking within the space community, where all of a sudden you start seeing venture capitalists in the United States suggesting to startup founders that maybe they should be looking at building in Europe. So there's a really interesting change in the landscape. I'm going there, frankly, to kind of learn about how does the global community that convenes in Ireland think about these things, because I'm sure there'll be new thoughts that we don't see as much in the United States. So I'm really going there to learn. Happy to answer whatever questions they ask me. But I certainly am very excited about the future that Ireland actually has in space. Because I don't know if you're familiar with the AirSat 1 project, the little CubeSat that was launched out of UCD Dublin there. But the Always Home poem that was written and attached to that that spacecraft is possibly for me one of the most beautiful poetic expressions of our human interest in the stars and the cosmos since the Voyager program. So,
What a nice note to end on, Alex. We welcome you to Ireland. I hope you have a good time, and what a great conversation. Thanks for joining us today.
Real pleasure. Looking forward to being there.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11. On News Talk.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa HS for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur. like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTIX or Cosentix.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentix.